You cannot plan a crime out loud on a podcast and think it'll be successful.
Is it fate or just a date? Bet it's a movie, Chelsea, or hate. Mads is here to make her watch it. Either way, grab your popcorn, stay in for the evening. You know what it's time for, love at first screening.
Hello, and welcome back to Love at First Screening, the show where I, rom-com enthusiast Madison, introduce my friend, co-host, and resident genre skeptic Chelsea.
That's me.
To all the feel-good.
Cliche.
Romantic.
Questionable.
Hilarious.
Occasionally humorous.
Films she's never wanted to watch. But Chelsea, once again, you've already seen this movie.
Indeed, I have. Albeit probably over a decade ago, but yes, I have seen this movie.
And thus, you are eliminated from being the person in need of education of the film. And we have brought on someone far more professional than either of us to fill this role.
Yes, we have recruited a voice that will sound much deeper than any that have entered this studio before. My friend and the husband of our previous guest, Luke.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Luke, what is it like to be the first guy on this podcast? Do you feel like you're really breaking a glass ceiling for your group of people, or?
I truly, this has to be the first time a man has ever been on a podcast. And I'm glad I was the first one really breaking into the scene.
Well, we're really glad to be able to give you this opportunity. You know, I know that opportunities for guys to speak into microphones is not common. So I'm really glad that we could provide that for you today.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have this outlet of expression about rom-coms that I'm deeply passionate about.
Well, as our number one fan, I actually think you are passionate about rom-coms. Luke, from the very beginning, has been an avid listener.
Yeah, maybe more so than my wife. I won't throw her on the bus too much, but I definitely started listening and maybe lapped her a couple times, but I think we're both on the same page now.
Well, I really appreciate you for keeping our numbers up, you know, just helping us really stay on top of being like the 437,000th top podcast in the film review scene. But Luke, what is your background with rom-coms? Do you enjoy them? Do you hate them? Is it your life's passion? Just when did it start, really?
I had to take a step back because I'm not the most media literate person, I guess. I watched shows and movies just for the spectacle of them. I don't usually do too much in-depth reading into them and tend to see them, I guess, from a rose-tinted perspective versus male perspective. Victoria and I tried to watch Hitch, which does not hold up in today's times because of reasons, but I don't know if we'll ever get to that on the pod, but I thought it was a good movie and then tried to watch it in 2020 and probably haven't watched it or tried to watch it since. So
really the experience is just with Hitch.
I'm sure I've watched a bunch of other ones. There's Road Trips, or I grew up with two older sisters, so I'm sure I got drugged to watching rom-coms on TV shows back when cable was a thing we used to sit down and have to watch.
And are you, how many siblings do you have? This is actually just an interview of Luke now. Unfortunately, we're never going to talk about the movie. I'm just fascinated. Luke, tell me about your home life. How many siblings do you have?
I have two older siblings, both sisters. One has four children and the other has one child. So I have five niblings, and that's enough children for the family.
That's incredible. Do you have a favorite nibbling who you will be helping fund their college fund so the others know that they're the favorite?
To keep the peace, I'll say no comment, but one of them is my goddaughter. So she may or may not be a beneficiary in my benefits at work.
And what do you do for work, and what's your social security number, blood type, your mother's maiden name, and the street you grew up on?
Two of those answers are actually the same. I won't go into which one.
Really interested in that.
A lot of my family lived on the same road, so the road has my mom's maiden name. And then for work, I'm an environmental scientist. I lead a team in Wilmington, North Carolina, and also Fayetteville, North Carolina, to do residential drinking water sampling.
Nice. So do you believe that people should be able to just freely drink water without dying?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's a really hot take.
I think access to clean water is a right. And yeah, make sure you're knowledgeable on what you're drinking. Even if you have public water, it may not be as clean as you think it is.
But what about this PBR that I'm drinking here? Do you think that that is safe for drinking? Also, sorry for the spoon clatter during that.
I mean, I guess it's safe. I used to work at a bar, and we'd say that it's drinking PBR is like having sex in a canoe. It's fucking close to water.
So good. Yeah. I like to say that I'm a liquor snob and just an absolute redneck when it comes to beer. Although I will not drink really anything that says light after it. That's the snobbery that I have.
Fair enough.
Well, Chelsea, you've spent more time with Luke than I have. Just because she likes to socialize with our highest listening listeners, you know, in order to foster a community for our lasters. Definitely has nothing to do with the fact that you're married to Tori and she knows Tori from a long time ago. No, it's purely podcast based. Chelsea, do you think that Luke liked this movie?
I don't have much of this to base on because I think I've only watched one rom-com with Luke, which was something we're now gonna have to find a new guest for because he's already seen it. Crazy Rich Asians. We watched that once. I think that was gearing up for the wedding. We watched a lot of wedding sort of content, or at least Tori and I did. So I think that was one of those. But that I think I can say is a better rom-com than this one. So I think it's mediocre leaning not great. I think is probably the vibe of this.
Well, before we let Luke answer, I'm going to give everybody a rundown of this movie so they can make their own decision if they haven't watched it based on the sonorous, dulcet tones of my recounting. They can decide if they think Luke liked this movie. All right, so How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is a 2003 romantic comedy directed by Donald Petrie, starring Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey. If you look at the Wikipedia, it says that it was based on a picture book by the same name, but the book doesn't really have a narrative. It's only a list of comedic dating don'ts. So the characters and plot were created for the film. Like, it's a tie-in to the movie. It's not really based on, you know, it's, anyway. I digress. So, Kate Hudson, playing Andy Anderson, is a writer for the women's magazine Composure as their subject matter expert for a how-to article series. She wants to write on more serious topics, and instead of pursuing a role at a different magazine or different company entirely that might actually allow her to do what she wants, she instead bemoans the fact that she can't write what she wants and realizes that perhaps the way she can do this is by proving to her boss that she can write a knockout article based on her friend Michelle's experiences with yet another breakup, inspired with the concept of how to lose a guy in 10 days. So to prove her point, she'll begin dating a man and drive him away within 10 days simply by imitating Michelle's behavior. Michelle is played by the most perfect actress of our time and the love of my life, Catherine Hahn. Then we see advertising executive Benjamin Barry, played by Matthew McConaughey, wants to branch out from his usual clientele of beer and sports campaigns to lead a prestigious ad campaign for a diamond company that is obviously the De Beers Corporation. They just have to name it something else. At a bar, Ben's boss, Philip, questions Ben on if he has enough insight into romance typically associated with diamonds, and Ben's like, obviously, I can make any woman fall in love with me. I have a six-pack. Although I have read articles that says that Matthew McConaughey doesn't often wear deodorant, so I digress, although he is really hot. In response, Philip says, okay, if you can achieve this before the company ball in 10 days, you can lead the diamond campaign. Ben's rivals, Judy Spears and Judy Greene, were at Composure earlier in the day, and they know about Andy's article for How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. They see Andy at the bar, and they pick her as the woman that Ben must romance. They meet and then soon start their mutual quests, although they have no idea the true intentions behind each motivation. Andy makes Ben's life a living hell, trying to get him to break up with her, but Ben sticks around in hopes of making her fall in love with him. She makes him miss the final shot at a Knicks game by sending him to get her a soda, gets him knocked out of the movie theater by talking too loudly during Sleepless in Seattle, which we may eventually watch. Moves her things into his apartment, gets him the love fern and a Chinese crested dog, and takes him to a Celine Dion concert when he was under the impression that they were going to go to another Knicks game. She also occasionally lets her normal side show, and Ben does begin falling for non-pointedly crazy Andy. She ends up throwing a fit at his poker night, which drives him to break up with her, but then his friends Tony and Thayer are like, look man, you have like 4 days left in this, or 3 days left, whatever, you have to pull through, you have to get this account. And he's like, okay fine, let's go to couples therapy. And then Catherine Hahn pretends to be the couples therapist. Great scene. Love her, and suggests that Andy should meet Ben's family. And then while visiting, they form a genuine bond, and it's great. And then Andy and Ben go to the ball together, and Philip talks to Andy and tells Ben that he met her, she loves you, you win. And then to sabotage Ben, Judy and Judy, the Judys, respectively, tell Tony and Thayer that Annie knew about the bet all along and was playing along to help Ben win, and then they beg her to keep quiet, not knowing that she wasn't aware of the bet. Simultaneously, Andy's boss, Lana, who is unaware of Ben's role, tells him about Andy's article, and then upon learning about Ben's bet, Andy attempts to humiliate Ben. They argue on stage. They do a really interesting rendition of You're So Vain by Carly Simon, which is my go-to karaoke song. And then everything kind of unfolds. She almost steals like a $250,000 necklace by running out. It's fine. I'll tell you about the yellow diamond ring that I tried on once. That was like $30,000. Stunning. I will send it to our social media director, Marissa, so she can post pictures of it because it really was pretty. And then Tony ends up showing Ben Andy's article, in which she explains how she lost the only guy she's ever fallen for. And when he hears that she quit her job at Composure since Lana again refused to let her write about serious topics, he chases down her taxi and stops her and accuses her of running away. They reveal their true feelings for each other, and then Ben instructs the taxi driver to return Andy's belongings to home, which Ben will now be taking her to. And then they kiss, and that's the end of the movie. So Luke, you're a sensible guy who has fallen in love. You got married. You know what a love story is. I personally don't think that you found this a particularly compelling love story, since it was all fake on both sides and then became real, and it just seems implausible in a 10-day span, if I'm thinking with Chelsea's brain. But I also think that this movie is just has some very funny laugh out loud moments. And I think that if you're not looking at it critically and you're just watching it to watch a movie, this is not a bad pick.
It was okay. I think there are definitely worse romantic comedies, either on the romance side or the comedic side. I don't think I have to watch it again, but it was pretty good. It was a decent watch. Watching it next to my wife, it was definitely I don't think either of us would particularly choose to watch it again. So we'll get down to the breakdown of whether it is a romantic comedy, actually. But it was okay as far as movies go on that spectrum.
I want that to just be the new tagline for this movie. Like, basically, it's a movie.
It exists.
It just makes me think of Harry Styles describing Don't Worry, Darling as, it's a movie that feels like a movie.
This is, well, whether or not it's a rom-com remains to be seen, but it's a movie that feels, it evokes the sense of the rom-com in the way that I think a lot of people imagine rom-coms, especially for the era. What is this, 2003? This movie feels very 2003 in many, many ways. And, well, okay, I'm just going to jump in and say that as someone who hadn't seen this movie in a very, very long time, I remembered the basic plot of the film. I do think it's an interesting slight twist on the trope in rom-coms of the bet. Maybe just because it's one of the few that exists outside of high school, unclear. But I couldn't help but roll my eyes at the positioning of Andy as not like other girls. You know, she works at Composure, which is a women's lifestyle magazine, I would assume akin to like a Cosmo. But we're deep in that 2003 mindset. Everything is diet culture. They're congratulating Catherine Hahn on the fact that she hasn't eaten since her breakup, right? Like, we're deep in that mindset, and we're probably 8 to 10 years away from any kind of sense of what is actually healthy and, you know, moving. And granted, as we move into that space, we get like Goop, which isn't great, you know, like, should Gwyneth Paltrow be telling us what to do when she only drinks bone broth? Probably not. But like,
Chelsea, are you saying that you don't want to stick a jade egg up your coochie?
I'm not comfortable with any of those words.
Luke, would you stick a jade egg anywhere in your body?
No.
Good answer. Okay.
We have Andy at the very beginning, and you're introduced to her. She is finished writing this piece about bringing peace to the Middle East, thing like that, I think is the essence of this story, and which immediately cements us as like, okay, she's a serious writer. And you might be asking yourself, why is a quote-unquote serious writer working at a women's magazine? And I think that we as three people aware of the world can understand that, especially in 2003, a young beautiful woman might not be taken seriously at a serious journalism network. So she gets a job working at a women's magazine, which some might belittle, as Matthew McConaughey's character Ben does in the beginning of the film, calling it a girly magazine. But Andy is very serious, and the film wants us to know that she's very serious about her writing, and she wants to talk about things that matter, like politics and foreign affairs and the environment. But that's not what Composure is. And for the record, the types of things that Composure is writing about, while some of them might be, are most definitely problematic, the idea of having these like lighthearted pieces in and of themselves, I don't think is a bad thing at all. There's definitely an audience for it. It's just not what Andy wants. But Andy has taken this job because it's a foothold. She's going to make contacts, and she might end up getting a job that she actually wants down the road. Yeah, I couldn't help but roll my eyes. I'm like, oh, okay, she's not like other girls. Second thing that comes up, apart from her being a very serious journalist, is she's very excited that some contact got her tickets to the Knicks game for the, or maybe it's not even the Knicks game, it's the NBA final championships. I don't know. I don't know sports. I know we talked about Love and Basketball, but I think everyone that listened to that episode will know I don't know anything. So it's some big game. She's very excited, again, cementing her as not like other girls, because she likes sports and she's smart and she's cultured and she doesn't like all that girly crap they talk about at Composure, which is ridiculous and makes me roll my eyes. What I find interesting is that they don't do a whole lot to, I mean, actually, it's not really that interesting because it makes a lot of sense. They don't do a whole lot to cement Ben as not like other men, because men are allowed to be like other men. It's a good thing for men to be like other men. Men should always be like other men. That's the cult of masculinity for you.
Luke, would you consider yourself like other men? This is the first time we've ever had a man on the podcast. I just feel like you are now the voice of men. I'm so sorry. This is actually, you know how when any minority is in a room and suddenly they speak for the entirety of anyone who looks like them? That's now you. Could you speak to Ben's character, please?
Yeah. He worked for generic sports magazine? Is that, I think, what was he doing originally? He's looking at sports stuff. I don't remember. He drives a motorcycle but keeps a second helmet on the back, so we know he's a player, or at least regularly has people riding on the back of his motorcycle. So I think he's definitely what the ideal 2003 man would try to be in New York.
So would you consider him the everyman? Do you really identify within him as a man? Do you feel like he looks like what you picture when you picture? I can't even ask this seriously.
No, I mean, I certainly don't have six-pack abs and work and live in New York, have my own flat and whatever he does regularly.
We were told that you were a football star, so the lack of six-pack abs really surprises me, unless you were like a lineman or something.
I was a lineman. I was also the captain of my football team, but those days are long gone, and even in my fittest days, I did not have a six-pack, and I think it's very hard for a lineman to get a six-pack. You don't look at Jason Kelce and ask why he doesn't have a six-pack.
And Chelsea, just so you know, Jason Kelce is an NFL player. Or he was. He actually recently retired.
I was about to say, you know, I don't even look at Jason Kelce because I wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup, whether or not he's a lineman.
He's Taylor Swift's boyfriend's brother.
I barely know who Taylor Swift's boyfriend is. Like, I couldn't pick him out of a lineup, you know? So,
yeah, he played for the Eagles. Look at me knowing shit. That's crazy. I just want Chelsea to bask in the glory of my sports knowledge.
I do know who the Eagles are.
No, not the band. Not Hotel California. From Philadelphia. I'm kidding.
I know the Philadelphia sports teams, but anyway, that's really not relevant.
Sports are relevant because, one, we have a professional athlete in our midst, and, you know, Ben does sports marketing. by the time you leave, Luke, you will have an entirely new background, like lore built up around you.
Mm-hmm. I'll add it to my resume.
Perfect. Your Wikipedia page is going to look crazy. But okay, Chelsea and Luke, I wanted to ask you, so obviously Andy is intending to be a caricature of what you would consider to be the woman that men break up with, being that she is too clingy and she acts out in like these insane ways, doesn't allow him to have his interests without her present, tries to take over his life very quickly. And these are all tropes that we see, but I wanted to ask, I think it's far less a commentary on women and how they act when pursuing a relationship, and far more a commentary on how women are typically, of course, this is all speaking heteronormatively, but women are conditioned to almost respond in a more like anxious attachment style, especially when in new relationships, when they're trying to cement something, whereas men are taught to be avoidant and aloof with how they present in relationships in order to keep this air of, I don't even know what to call it other than maybe stoicism, as if to, you know, not, and there's a running theme of playing cards throughout all of this. And of course, part of that we can attribute to Betts, but I think a big part of it is that Ben is used to holding his cards very close, and Andy has to hold her cards close to win her bet. And so he's actually trying to sort of unlearn these behaviors of just immediately pulling back, while she is trying to overcome or trying to emphasize the idea of being all in. So I guess generally, do you feel like it speaks more to just how people are socially conditioned? Is this more like an untrue stereotype of that we're kind of exaggerating? What are your thoughts?
So are we talking about the caricature that Andy Anderson is portraying of women in relationships? I mean, I think she's trying to emulate what she assumed Michelle did, or Michelle did mention a few things that Andy and I forget what Andy's friend that was supposed to go to the basketball game but ended up not going because she took Ben with her. I forgot what her name was, but they obviously reacted negatively to things that Michelle did, and then she was using that to fuel what she thought would get Ben to break up with her. So I think she thought there was some truth in what she was doing, but I think, like, clinginess, some people are attracted to that. There's some people are plant people. They may love that you brought them a love fern the first time you see them, or maybe he wanted a dog named Kroll that peed on the poker table because that's the only green space they see in New York. But yeah, I think she was obviously playing up the stereotypes, and Ben was trying to roll with the punches just so that he could win his own bet. But you can definitely see the way they reacted on phone calls, that they were playing into roles and dynamics that are stereotypical to both male and female relationships, where I think at one point they were waiting on the other line for each other to call back or talk, and Ben took the call while he was in a meeting.
I think that relationships in general, especially new relationships, be they romantic, platonic, or otherwise, we navigate these by trying to figure out where the boundaries are. And I think Andy is showing us in a very extreme version of someone. I mean, granted, we know she's not really testing the boundaries. I mean, I guess she is in a way, but she's pushing past what we might consider acceptable boundaries in a new relationship. I think the most insane thing is that she got them a dog. They've not even been together a week. that's a living thing. You know, it's one thing for her to get a love fern, you know, that's something that just needs to be watered and, you know, put in a strategic spot in your apartment where it gets the proper amount of lighting for whatever kind of plant it is. I'm sure Tori might be able to tell us what amount of light a fern needs. I don't have that information. But the fact that she would get them a dog is, of course, absurd, which is sort of the point, right? This film is leaning into those ridiculous stereotypes because that's the point for this character to explore. But I think that in general, when we meet new people, you don't know what their interests are, and you also don't know what their, like, turn-ons or turn-offs are. So you might have a conversation in which you stumble upon something that triggers them to have some kind of reaction. It could be negative, it could be positive. And I think we're seeing that with Andy. It's just that in this particular experiment, if you will, she is looking for those big, giant pressure point buttons to push, because the whole point is for him to break up with her. So I think you can look at this, and yes, I think she is being a caricature of any wrong, quote unquote, wrong move that women in this particular case make in relationships, because I do think that, especially in 2003, and especially in a city where, you know, there's lots of people to choose from, if you will, right? This is very early days, if not of early, you know, like, online dating, right? The pool is bigger now than it was then. So to be in a place where, like, you could go out on the weekend and get, like, pick up multiple people at the different bars you go to. I don't know. I have been to a bar, but I've not been to that. I've never been in that situation. So I don't know what people did. I'm just speculating based on these terrible movies Madison has me watch constantly. But I do think that there's a game, particularly within the heterosexual dating scene, that is, it's kind of assumed you're going to play. You're not supposed to call a person, right? Like, we've all heard these things. You're not supposed to call a person too soon because you don't want to seem too needy. You don't want to seem too excited, which seems a little baffling to me because it's like, well, but you still need to show interest, but not too much interest. And I ultimately think that we as humans who may choose to participate in the institution of dating don't always know what to do unless it's been modeled for us. And unless you have friends or older siblings that have modeled this behavior for you, your parents likely aren't, unless you have divorced parents that might have been dating when you were younger, but that's still not going to be the same thing. So I think dating is one of those experiences that until you do it, you don't really know, apart from the fiction that you consume. You don't know what it's like, and you don't know what you should be doing or should not be doing. And also, we forget that, like most things in life, it's something we've made up. And so there's all these dumb pretend rules. And I think often people react not out of genuine, like, disinterest or, like, I don't like something you said, but rather an assumption that they should feel a certain way. Because we're all, to varying degrees, grappling within this, like, culture that we live in and this society that people before us have created. And so we know that, you know, as a woman or as a man or as a heterosexual woman or a heterosexual man, like, you should be acting a certain way. And when those outline, if you, like, looked it up, you know, the prescriptive way that you're supposed to act in these situations have been given to us by sources that are often not real. They are often coming from films, or they're coming from people who likely have very different experiences than we will ever have. We're trying to apply those to our own life to the best of our ability in order to function within something that we feel completely out of our element in. And so I do think often we, you know, again, I think I brought this up on a different episode, how my friends and I were freezing our own bras after watching the movie Sleepover because we thought it was a fun bonding activity rather than, like, a prank you're supposed to play on someone. Like, I think that the same kinds of things happen. Like, you think, oh, well, he called me the next day, like, maybe I shouldn't, like, maybe that's a bad thing. Like, why? Or not calling someone because, well, I don't want them to think that I'm too interested and too eager. These are all made up things. And so, yes, I do think Andy is operating on those stereotypes in order to drive this man away. But I don't think the mistakes that Michelle, I mean, I think she does make some kind of odd choices, but I don't think all of the things she's doing are exactly, like, faux pas that are unforgivable. And I also think that we have to remember within this context that, like, Michelle is also a caricature of a very particular type of woman that may or may not actually exist.
I really like how you brought up that, you know, dating is something that is rarely properly sort of modeled for people, because it really got me thinking about, you know, who modeled dating for me in a good way or bad way. And I think that siblings and friends can be interesting. I don't want to say models, because I feel like it's very much blind leading the blind unless you have a much older sibling who, you know, doesn't make poor life decisions. Because, okay, I'm just thinking about, like, my older sister. I'm just going to put her on blast here. I don't think she listens to the podcast. It's fine. I've said all this to her face anyway. It's not like I'm talking behind her back. But she is the type of person who would, like, get a dog with someone 3 months into a relationship. You know, she would move in with someone very quickly. And then by contrast, I'm the type of person who would date someone for a year before even referring to them, like, as my significant other or partner. Like, up to that point, they would just be the person I'm dating. And I think it's, I guess what gets me about this movie is that the whole premise is sort of based on this idea that Andy's going to make Michelle's mistakes. And so often in rom-coms, we're like, where are the protagonist's friends? You know, they would not be making these poor decisions if they just had a friend who was talking to them about whatever issue that they're going through. And I guess what bothers me most about this movie, and I will say that against all odds, I like this movie. I think this movie is just one of those, you throw it on, you have popcorn, like it's a ladies' night movie, because Matthew McConaughey is shirtless in that one scene. Like, really, that's what it comes down to for me. I'm a simple woman of simple means. But it really bothers me that, because I don't feel like Michelle is the Carrie Fisher character in When Harry Met Sally, where they're like, yeah, of course he's not going to leave his wife. And she goes, you're right, you're right. I know you're right. You know, that refrain that she has throughout the movie until she ends up meeting Harry's friend, they get married, etc. Michelle seems like at least moderately receptive to the advice of her friends. Like, Andy is able to go over there and kind of pull her out of her stupor after she breaks up with Mike, or gets broken up with by Mike. And it, I don't know. I think that Andy and the other chick who, Luke, I also can't remember her name because she wasn't important ultimately. I think they're kind of bad friends to Michelle. That's what, other than the very blatant 2003 moments of this movie, that's what bothers me most about this movie. Other than the fact that Kate Hudson also gets mad at him for having a bet when she also played him, but, you know, we'll allow it. But yeah, I don't like how they weren't bad friends to Michelle for basically, like, you're so pathetic and we're not going to really talk to you about it much. We're just going to placate you when it happens, instead of maybe being like, hey, why are you telling a guy that you love him on the second date? That's crazy. Let's reevaluate ourselves.
And ultimately they're wrong, because the guy comes back despite whatever she did. And I don't think we got too many details on that, because ultimately, once they use that as a vehicle to get her to make the article about how to lose a guy in 10 days, we didn't reach back into that too much. And I don't remember when he comes to the door what his reasoning for leaving / coming back was. But he did come back, so the conceit just kind of left at that point since he came back. Andy also did things that I don't think are, like, faux pas in relationship. Like, talking during a movie is just abhorrently wrong, regardless of, like, what you're trying to do, or using your second date boyfriend as a human shield when you were the one talking during a movie, or lying about an abusive boyfriend in public that he doesn't let you eat. Like, maybe this happened in early 2003, but that was just wild to me, that this was like if the conceit is these are common mistakes women make, why are we committing crimes, and why is he staying, I guess, at that point, when she's in a loudly declaring that he is abusive to her in a restaurant while secretly watching the Knicks game that she is denying him from watching, and then just leaving him to sit in the vegetarian restaurant, which we saw in the first time they met, she was eating seafood, which vegetarians eat seafood, but obviously he saw her eat some kind of meat before declaring that she's a vegetarian when he decided to cook for her.
Yeah, I agree. I think perhaps what this film has done, or rather, if we're talking about within the context of the film, what Andy has chosen for her bad girlfriend character is instead to become the caricature of, like, the crazy ex-girlfriend that is just off the walls, bananas, like you said, outright in public, accusing him of being abusive, apart from, you know, and then, you know, just having bad behavior in general. Obviously, nobody wants you to talk during a movie. That's a really excellent point. And maybe as someone who takes themselves very seriously, Andy is like, well, I would never make any of these mistakes Michelle's making. And I wonder if, in part, transforming the normal mistakes that maybe Michelle has made, again, we don't have a ton of detail on what she does, apart from, I think one of the early things was calling up the guy that broke up with her to tell him everything she ate that day, which just seems like a weird topic of conversation in general, but also as someone who has witnessed the older women who were like in the thick of diet culture talk about food, it kind of makes sense to me that that someone might do that. It seems weird, but I also think food in general, not to get off on a tangent, is very integral to the human experience. Like, we quite literally need it to survive, and so I do think that to a certain extent it's how we connect to each other through culture. Like, so yes, do I think it's weird for me to be like, oh my god, man, I'm dating, here's a list of the things I've eaten today? Seemingly the way that's presented is like, I've just called you to tell you that, okay, goodbye now, which is perhaps not what happened. Maybe it's like you're chatting about your day and you just start listing like, oh, I had this really great salad for lunch, you know, I had a nice rice cake, because that's what women in 2003 were told they needed to eat. But like,
ugh, I hate rice cakes so much.
Fun fact, the English bulldog, French bulldog, and Boston terrier that I house sat for used to get rice cakes along as like snacks. Like, those were things that I gave them. They liked them a lot. But yeah, I do agree. I think that Andy has gone past dating faux pas and has entered a theatrical arena of just unhinged human behavior. But I think what's interesting is that as the viewer, although you are thinking like, this is crazy, I think that those kinds of behavior, when you're seeing them performed by a certain type of person, I'm not even going to say woman in this case, but like, if there is an unhinged behavior that you see performed by a particular group who perhaps is probably incorrectly, but like it's a stereotypical of that group, and it's reinforcing some kind of inherent bias that you have. And I think that's probably what she ends up doing, right? Is like, oh, women are crazy when you date them, right? Like, I've heard people say that before. So she is a sound, well, is she of sound mind? I don't know. She is. Like, as like a serious person who like wants to be taken seriously, she's going to an extreme because it's so far removed from what she knows to be true as a woman who dates. And seemingly her friends don't actually, as you said, Madison, they don't seem to be very good friends. They don't talk to each other. So like, if she doesn't have the facts, the concrete things, and also we have to remember that the article she's writing is for entertainment purposes. Like, yeah, it's a how-to column, but it's a how-to column in a magazine that is meant to be entertaining, which is why I don't know what that writer's name was, but they're in the meeting and she's like, so I have the Botox and it's very scary, but upbeat. Like, everything she's saying is like depressing, but upbeat, terrifying, but upbeat, because a magazine like that is still entertainment. Like, you're not going to Cosmopolitan. Well, maybe you are now. I don't know how it's transformed. But in 2003, you're not going to Cosmo or this fictitious magazine Composure for, like, hard-hitting truths about anything. Like, you're there for the sensationalization of Botox. You're there for, like, the gossip. You're there for these quick tips that like may or may not actually be helpful, but that's how they sell magazines. So like, I think Andy's choice to like create this unhinged character is in part informed both by her feeling that she herself is so far removed from anything bad in the dating world, like she doesn't have these issues, so she can't personally relate, but also informed by the fact that like, I'm going to assume she's good at her job, whether or not she enjoys it, like whether or not it's the writing she wants to do. She's good at her job, so she knows what those readers want to read.
I realized that I fell into the trap when Luke brought up that Mike does eventually come back to potentially get back with Michelle, is that obviously the whole film is painted as Michelle is this crazy, clingy, overdramatic, like bad with relationships type. But like Luke pointed out, he comes back, and why are we sitting here thinking that it was fully Michelle that was the deciding factor in why this relationship failed? And I have a fabulous friend who I love very much. And she was talking about another friend of hers. She goes, "It's so funny. If you blend you, who is, just perpetually unentangled, and then you mash me up with her friend who can't get past like a third date because of how soon they want to fully jump into a relationship." She was like, "I feel like you would have one perfectly standard person." And I was like, "Yeah, that's what happens if you mash me and my older sister up, is that you probably have one perfectly standard person who follows a perfectly normal time frame for a relationship. Not that that exists. As we've said, it's all subjective. All the points are made up. The score does matter, and that's why this is the worst game of whose line ever in existence is dating. But why are we assuming that? I don't know. I guess the whole concept, how to lose a guy, like he's a pair of keys. Luke, do you ever feel like a pair of keys or perhaps a plastic bag floating in the wind? What's the line? Do you ever feel like a plastic bag float? I can't remember the Katy Perry lyric, but you get the question. Do you ever feel like you could be a man lost?
Sure. I feel like I can be lost, or left behind like a pair of keys. I'm lucky to have found someone in the middle of a pandemic, and things worked out well on dating apps, and didn't have to be on the dating apps too long during the pandemic to find the love of my life. But I think there's
Oh,
definitely
he
horror
found
stories.
his carabiner.
I think that's appropriative, Madison.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You're right. I'm imposing. Sorry, that's so fucking funny.
A lesbian joke for any heterosexuals listening.
Yeah, I was about to say, Luke, is there a straight equivalent?
Not that I'm aware of. Nope.
How do you keep your keys together? I actually do use a carabiner. Famously bisexual on
I
this
do use a carabiner, actually.
podcast.
Wow. Appropriation.
You heard it here, everyone. Luke appropriates lesbian culture.
He has a wife and uses a carabiner. This is terrible. I bet you also wear flannel.
I do love a good flannel.
Chelsea, ultimately, what do you dislike most about this movie? What do you like most about this movie? Luke, I will also throw this question to you as well, because I feel like it is okay. I want to defend this movie really quick just to say that I think it's really funny. Like, there are some really good, like, sort of one-liner zings that are really cute. There's the really cute scene when they're at his parents, and that feels heartfelt. I don't know. This is just a movie that, even though it's probably bad for you, you still want to watch it if you're a rom-com enthusiast.
I think what I appreciate about this movie is I don't want to say it's not inverted, it's not flipped on its head, but it's a different look at that bet trope. Instead of one person being all-knowing and having all of the cards and manipulating the other person with all of the information that they have, and it's all fake and whatever, the way that, like, 10 Things I Hate About You or She's All That, I think. Like, those are the only two ones that are coming to my mind right now. And someone gets incredibly hurt at the end because they realize they've been like a pawn in the scheme. I think what's interesting about this storyline is that they're both using each other and also both using each other for like professional gain. Whereas I feel like other stories, it's more mean-spirited. Like, yeah, this might be manipulative, and if you are dealing with another human being and like their emotions, I don't know that it's as mean-spirited as some of those other stories are. However, I think it's interesting how upset they both get when they find out that it was all for an article or all for obtaining a big ad account, you know? I also think it's interesting that the bet is set and honestly set up to fail by Ben's rivals in this, who are being very strategic. Also, I just have to say for the record, because I know everyone's dying to know where the lesbians are in this movie, it's the Judys, and I think they are in a lovely relationship. with each other. I just needed that noted for the record. The power suits, you know, it's just chef's kiss. Love that for them in 2003. When did the L Word come out? Were they watching that yet? I don't know. Anyway, I think I appreciate that about the movie, that it was, it felt more even. You as the viewer know from the very beginning, okay, he needs this to gain an account. She's writing an article and is never planning on making this a real relationship. So you don't feel bad for her. You definitely don't feel bad for him, which is why when they seem to develop real feelings for each other, it feels more even than other bets do. So I think it's interesting. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying there's not flaws and questions that I would have. I think my biggest question about this is the 10-day time frame. You're telling me that these heterosexual people fell in love with each other within 10 days? Because I don't even think it's actually 10 days, because it's not until they go to Staten Island to see his family that I feel like Andy looks at him like a real human being and not a story that she's writing. So I would say it's like,
Chelsea, I want it noted, I know heterosexuals who got engaged after 8 months. Anything is possible if you just believe. Actually, I once sold an engagement ring to someone who they did technically know each other through going to church with one another for like 3 years, but they went on one date, okay, on like a Friday, and apparently that date was so magnificent that he bought an engagement ring on Sunday, proposed by the next weekend, and 6 months later for her ring cleaning and checkup, they were together. So crazier shit has
happened.
I'm
not saying there aren't exceptions. Are they Mormons? Yeah, that feels very like a very fast timeline for marriage, Madison. And I'm not saying that these stories don't exist. And I have questions about some other surrounding context that we might actually be missing. But what I am saying is that it just feels really fast to go from complete strangers, and especially strangers within a completely antagonistic relationship. Like, she is actively trying to get him to break up with her the entire time they're together, and he is only holding on, but like barely holding on. He does not keep his cool. Like, the first couple of dates he keeps his cool, but then like later he is visibly uncomfortable, distressed, and like, I don't totally blame him, because as we've stated, she's acting completely unhinged in a lot of ways. Yeah, I don't know how you go from that to I get maybe being like, okay, wow, maybe this is, there's things about this person that I admire, or there's things about this person that I do like and could potentially want in a partner, but there's not a whole lot of that happening. So I can only assume that the times that they've spent together, like, we get one kind of dating, actual dating montage where he's teaching her how to ride the motorcycle after they go to visit his family. So there's just not a lot there. So the 10-day timeline, which again, as I stated, is less than 10 days, I find completely unrealistic and questionable at best. But to remind you, I do want to say this. The friend neither of you can remember the name of, and I couldn't remember it, but I wrote it down, is Jeannie. And I need Marissa to gif her with double-fisting the martinis going, drama, drama, drama. Because that made me laugh so hard. Anyway, it's just an iconic, she just got two martinis. Drama, drama, drama. Do I like this movie?
Marissa has so much work ahead of her.
I know, we're drunk with power. Do I like this movie? Not really. I think this is one where, while I can point out its flaws, and while I can try my best to separate what is it that I don't like that's 2003 and what do I not like that's the story itself, I don't know, it just feels like a fine, like, it's fine. I don't think it's rage inducing, but it's not really one of, I haven't watched it in like a decade, and maybe I'll never watch it again, at least for another decade, maybe two, you know, when I'm like 55 I'll watch it maybe.
Luke, do you think that when for Chelsea's 55th birthday party, do you think that you will also attend the viewing?
Sure. I think we could make a great drinking game out of this and make it a little bit more tolerable. But yeah, I agree with Chelsea. And what does Ben's boss know about love to be able to just have one conversation with Andy and be like, yep, she looked at him when talking about him, so she's in love. Did we see him in a relationship? What is his credentials on actually knowing what love is? And to Madison's credit, Madison was talking about the going to the parents' house. I think that's a great scene, but I was mad that they were talking about how good at reading people he was, and he hasn't figured out that she's doing this because of a bet yet. And then they undercut it by making her cheat to win, which I think she should have just beat him outright, because she's obviously hard to read, and it was undercut by them showing she was cheating, which I guess also just shows she's had a good relationship with the family that quickly, and everyone was teaming up against Ben, which was cute, but I think she should have won on her own, and then Ben could have been like, maybe you are hard to read. But I guess that would have ruined it and would have had the rug pull a lot earlier. But yeah, I think if we make a drinking game out of this, we could probably make it tolerable in 20 years.
We can all double fist the martinis.
I was about to say, what would you recommend we drink? But I guess, I don't know. I did actually try my first martini the other day at a party and was like my first just, you know, very classic gin martini, and was like, oh, I don't think I like this.
We could put something else in the martini glasses. I just think to, you know, really capture Jeannie's drama, you need the drama of a very angular glass.
That sounds perfect. Well, now that we've established that we can watch this again in 25 years and 11 months, right? Yes. Yeah, we can watch this movie again in 25 years and 11 months from when we're recording it. Ultimately, was this even a rom-com? Because part of the reason why we had to watch this is because this is one of the most infamous rom-coms. When people say, hey, what's your favorite rom-com? A lot of people will name this one. Like, this comes up for a lot of people. A lot of people that I know are like, oh my God, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Love that movie. You have to talk about it. And I'm like, yeah, but everyone's seen it. Except for, well, previously Luke, and now he's been indoctrinated. Was it even a rom-com?
Luke, as our most avid listener, how do we determine?
Well, they definitely dated. Oh, yes, I can.
Yeah, Luke, actually, you ask us the questions.
all right, so Chelsea and Madison, did they date?
Not really.
I think they spend a lot of time
dating. No, they don't. Because neither of their motivations is to actually get to know and connect with this person emotionally. So I would argue that nothing could be considered dating until they go to visit his family. And at that point, there are certain walls that have come down because they actually start connecting. That, right, we have that one montage of her and him in Staten Island, him teaching her to ride a motorcycle. I would argue that's the only thing in this movie that you can be even consider dating, and then leading up to the moment where everything comes crashing down because they both find out they were being used. And it's like, wow, Mr. and Mrs. Hypocrite, because you were both doing it, so you can't both also be mad. So I guess sort of they date.
I'd argue against that. I think they dated. I agree with Madison. They dated the whole time. I don't think, to our second point, love was in the driver's seat until they go to the parents' house. I think you can go on, I mean, you can go on dates with your friends. You can go out for dinner. You can go see a movie. You can go to a Knicks game and interrupt it. And you can go see a Celine Dion concert. I think that's dating. That's a lot of high school dating, is just going and doing things together. But yes, to the second point, is love in the driver's seat? I would agree with Chelsea that not until they get to the parents' house, not until they actually start somewhat caring about each other.
Luke brings up exactly what I was thinking, which is, I think, Chelsea, you're making a beautiful argument for they were not dating with intention before that. But I think that brings us to this broader question of how a lot of people sort of engage with the dating scene as a whole, especially, I would say, younger people, especially. It's almost like sometimes you engage with the dating scene not with an objective of romance, certainly not if you're having a fun time. Not that I would know anything about that, in case anyone who employs me or also potentially is related to me is listening to this. I would not know anything about that. But I think it is a really interesting question of, do they have to date with intention for it to really qualify as dating?
I think it's for the podcast host to decide what their definition of dating is. Is it with intention for, or is it that they went on dates?
My argument here is not about the intention in and of itself, but previously when we talk about what is dating, because we have plenty of films we watch where there is nothing that looks like a date, right? They're not going out to dinner together. They're not doing an activity together per se. There's lots of romance stories where the two characters are not interacting in a way that you might call a date if you were to look one up in a Merriam-Webster dictionary, right? However, we have expanded our definition to encompass time that people are spending together in which they are emotionally connecting within the context of it being a romantic date. Because as Luke points out, you can go out on dates with your friends, right? Because honestly, the definition of a date is probably just like an engagement, like you set a time to go do an activity together. So it doesn't have to be romantic. But within the context of us analyzing rom-coms, do they date? We're wanting to know whether or not these people are spending any amount of time within the film interacting with each other that would allow them to connect on an emotional and romantic level. And so sometimes that is actual dates. So I would say these characters, they go out on dates. Yes, they do. They go out and they do things together. But my argument here is that because neither of these people, until Staten Island, are participating authentically within this experience, they're not connecting with each other because they're both playing caricatures. She's playing this unhinged woman that wants this guy to break up with her, and he is playing the like doting boyfriend that is trying to get this woman to fall in love with each other. And neither of them are acting authentically in any single way until they go to meet his family, and she has to not be unhinged because she doesn't know these people, and I guess, you know, is like offering them respect. She's in their home, and at that point she is allowing herself to be more authentically Andy and not this caricature that she's playing. So you can disagree with me, but I am maintaining that I don't know that they do date within this movie, but they don't date till the end of the movie, because the whole middle section is them playing games. And I don't think that counts as dating, especially because those games that they're playing are not in an attempt to win the affection of another human being. Well, maybe his is, but again, not for himself. It's for a job. And she is actively trying to repel him.
I think that's beautifully stated. Honestly, I just pushed because I wanted to hear that beautiful explanation. I agree with you. I think if we're looking at these characters actually intentionally growing closer together, it's really only during the Staten Island scenes. But Luke, what is our next stipulation for it to be a rom-com?
So did we laugh? Madison's mentioned there were a lot of good one-liners and bits that we laughed at. I laughed a few times. That's the redeeming qualities of the movie. It is funny, whether you're laughing at Andy's expense while she's going unhinged, or how we're laughing at how awkward Ben is trying to keep it together and then ultimately failing in multiple circumstances. I think it's funny. It's good. I had a lot of laughs. Did y'all laugh?
I did. I felt like I laughed out loud at multiple points. And I think part of it was I also laughed just simply out of discomfort, especially during the Princess Sophia scene where she decides to name his, how anatomical do we want to get? We'll go rom-com style. She decided to name his member Princess Sophia. I'll be thinking about that for a very long time. It will haunt me in moments where I feel perfectly fine and at peace, and then I'll remember that scene from this movie simply to have my peace disrupted. I'm looking to see if there's any other really funny lines, because I think a lot of the comedy was honestly just from tension.
I do agree. There was several points I'm like watching this movie like through my fingers because I'm feeling like this is so awkward, but you are laughing out of discomfort of the awkwardness. Like I do think that's where it's the tension of watching people act in a way that they should not be acting and knowing you can do nothing to stop it, and also knowing it in at least in this case they're doing it on purpose, and how they do it with a straight face I'll never know is pretty funny. I particularly liked Catherine Hahn playing the therapist, inviting them over to her apartment for a therapy session. But what I especially love is the follow through on that joke, where when he is trying to find Andy at the very end of the movie and he comes to the composer office, he recognizes her. And as he's running away, he says, "You owe me $300. So the fact that Catherine Hahn charged him $300, he paid her $300 for a fake therapy session, is incredibly funny to me.
Oh, we should really run this scam more often. Luke, unfortunately, we do have a $150 guest fee for our guests that come on the podcast, and Tori didn't pay hers. So I could provide you my banking information. My account number is...
It appears I also owe $300, much like Catherine Hahn. Then
there are some good lines in here. I did like when he called her a one-woman circus, because that's exactly, I felt like it really summarized her actions throughout the movie really well. And you know what? Whoever said that Kate Hudson can't act? She acted twice in this movie.
Actually, one thing I absolutely hated that he said was, I think it's when they break up and then he ends up like parkouring down the fire escape to like get her before she leaves, and he asks, "Can you forgive me, sugar puss?" Every single skin cell crawled. I hated it so much. I don't know who wrote that line, but they should never be allowed to write a script again.
Luke, what's your favorite term of endearment to use?
I don't think I've ever said sugar puss, so I'm glad I can say that genuinely.
I don't even want you to say it now. My favorite term of endearment for Chelsea is her name.
It feels a bit too affectionate at times, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to put that out on the internet of what my favorite, not for any weird reasons, but for privacy, I think in... at least the last podcast I listened to, I'm going to err on the more side of Chelsea of not oversharing personal details.
Although now we do know that the street you grew up on and your mother's maiden name are the same. So I'm one step closer away to cracking all your sensitive accounts.
That is fair. I need to go change those right now.
I'll just start clicking on my mechanical keyboard in front of me to make it sound like I'm a hacker.
You just have to say, "I'm in."
I'm in.
That's going to pay dividends in future episodes. I'm going to make a soundboard of all our favorite quotes.
Exactly.
I do have a friend, and again, I'll be vague because that's my style, that they and their partner do have some really nauseating names for each other. And it's really hard to keep a straight face when they're on the phone together. So, but I don't think any of them are as offensive as Sugar Puss, so... It's just so bad. I'm so sorry. I feel like Madison in the My Life in Ruins episode, where anytime she had to say poopy, she was just upset about it. Although I would argue that that is far more palatable than what Matthew McConaughey calls Kate Hudson in this movie.
Well, you know, Chelsea, time is a flat circle. Actually, sorry, you're right. I should do the whole line. Chelsea, time is a flat circle. Everything we have done or will do, we will do over and over again forever. That was just me trying to do another Matthew McConaughey impression from the single best season of television ever created, the first season of True Detective. I just had to squeeze it in and I knew I wasn't going to be able to. So, Luke, I think we've kind of decided that maybe this wasn't your cup of tea, but if you had to rank this movie on perhaps a made-up scale that's based off of real estate concept of a walkability score that we're transforming into a watchability score, where one, you're stranded in the desert, two, you're at a back roads barbecue, three, you're at a strip mall in suburbia, four blocks from a transit stop, and five, best coffee in town right downstairs, where would you put this movie?
I'd put this at a solid three, strip mall in suburbia. You're probably going to find most of what you want there, but your choices are going to be limited to big name brand things for the most part.
I think Luke just single-handedly actually explained what a three is better than we ever have, Chelsea. Luke, are you sure that you don't want to perhaps take over this podcast? I just think that you're doing it really well. Don't tell Tori we offered you this, though, because we didn't offer it to her, and I think she would be offended.
It's okay. I think in an earlier episode, Chelsea offered me a kidney over my wife, considering I was listening to the podcast before she started. So I think she understands what terms we're on as far as laughs goes. Some eagle-eared listeners can put that together.
I completely forgot about that, but yeah. And honestly, I feel like she should respect it, because if the roles were reversed and my partner were listening to her podcast and I wasn't, I think she would be more inclined to offer that person a kidney over me.
I agree. I think she would hard choose that as well.
Gosh, you guys make me wish I had more than two kidneys, because I'd just be throwing them out left and right at you and your partners. Like, I honestly feel sad that I don't have enough kidneys to give.
You can always find more.
Oh, no.
It's just like a true crime episode about Madison, a woman who was harvesting kidneys so she could continually donate them. It's like she has Munchausen by proxy, but instead she's like on the black market cutting people's bodies open just to donate their kidneys so she can get like the credit for it.
So maybe I can be my own season of True Detective and bring in my Matthew McConaughey reference that way.
I really hope that organ donation places don't just let you walk up with a cooler and give them a cold organ off the streets.
Hey, besties. What is the tax amount I can write off for these? I have three kidneys, and I actually have some stem cells if you're interested.
She hires a whole team of actors to pretend to be the surgeons, to be a guise for her bringing a kidney that is not her own to the hospital for the transplant. I think she really go all out, really make it work.
Guys, you cannot plan a crime out loud on a podcast and think it'll be successful.
I don't know that that's true. I feel like people have walked into police stations and loudly proclaimed credit for heinous crimes and walked out of there not being arrested. That has absolutely happened. So I think you could say things on a podcast under the guise of it being fiction. And also, Luke is pretty much our audience, so as long as he doesn't report you, I think we're okay.
I'm not a narc.
Luke's like, actually, I have a lot of issues with our justice system. He stop showing your ACAB tattoo. It's just, I get that you're really proud of that tramp stamp you have, but like, Luke, pull your shirt down. It's getting uncomfortable. It's not that kind of show.
Well, Luke, I would like to thank you for coming on here and chatting with us about this movie and really being our number one supporter in our creative endeavors, being the first man that we've let open his mouth about rom-coms. I feel like it's too soon to say, because I feel like you're a great example, right? Like, you're the first male podcast guest in the way that, like, a lot of parents have their first child and, like, it's really good and you think, yeah, let's have another one. they should have just quit at one. So I don't know that we will in the future, but who knows?
Chelsea, I love that you're saying this knowing that I am a second child.
I'm a third child, so I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're the redemption for the second one.
I just hope I get maybe invited back sometime, even though I mansplained Jason Kelsey to Chelsea. Maybe there'll be more sports things you need me to talk about in the future.
Ooh, do you know anything about baseball?
Unfortunately, I don't like the sport, but I know a fair amount, I guess.
That's the correct answer, first and foremost. I think if I force Chelsea to watch the absolute atrocity that is the film Fever Pitch, even though she has not seen it, we might bring you back on just to be our sports announcer for that. Do you like Drew Barrymore? Of course you do. Who doesn't?
I don't have strong opinions on Drew Barrymore.
What are your feelings on Jimmy Fallon?
He's okay.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I have very negative feelings about Jimmy Fallon, but that's neither here nor there. He is also the male lead in Fever Pitch. But yeah, so Chelsea, you might have the worst movie you've ever watched in your future.
That's really hard to believe, considering another film that Drew Barrymore was in that we have covered previously. Although I think it could be fun to have both you and Tori on. We'll have a married couple as our guest. I think that could be fun. Plus, I feel a little guilty because the movie we had Tori watch was not your typical rom-com, and I think she was very thrown. And I'll be honest, that was purely my little prank on her, and I don't think she knew what she was walking into. So I do feel kind of bad, especially because she made a big stink about me inviting you on the podcast before I invited her on the podcast, which, in my defense, she doesn't listen. So, like, how do I know if she'd be prepared? I knew you would be. You're the most prepared guest we've ever had. Like, I felt incredibly confident in my choice. But I do think maybe, because I do love Tori, that maybe we'll have her back and we'll give her and you an actual, well, you got a stereotypical rom-com, but she'll get one, and it could be fun to have talk to a married couple, you know. But, you know, you got, which, by the way, everyone, I guess it's 2 months late, but happy first anniversary to the both of you.
Yay!
Thank you. To the best maid of honor.
From my understanding, you guys actually had the coolest wedding that ever did exist.
It was pretty fun. Not every day you can get married next to an albino alligator or freshly born sea otters, so... if you have the chance to get married in an aquarium, I would do that. Highly recommend.
It was a lot of fun. There were obviously fish everywhere. Not everybody has a touch tank at their reception, you know, like, that's fun. And Tori did a great job on all of the decor and everything. It really came together and it was quite beautiful. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe you guys can come back and tell us about your wedding and how it's been being married. And then we can talk about probably a problematic relationship, because that seems to be par for the course in this line of work.
Maybe we'll have Catherine Hahn on as a relationship therapist, as a couples therapist, and she can talk to you and Tori about, I don't know, how to be an even cuter couple. Disgusting.
I look forward to our therapy session with Catherine Hahn. Friend of the pod.
Yeah, friend of the pod, love of my life.
Would you pay Catherine Hahn $300 to pretend to be your therapist? I think that's the real question that people are dying to know the answer to.
As long as we could record it and put it on laughs, absolutely.
Ugh, see, this number one, he is just thinking about our status as podcasters. He is thinking about marketing.
What a guy.
All right, well, Madison, we have watched and discussed How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. But I would like to know what we're watching and discussing next week.
Such a great question, Chelsea. You know, I thought very long and hard about this because I like to throw in something a little different each time. And we're actually kind of kicking it old school next time. And we're going to watch Sabrina featuring Audrey Hepburn because, look, we had her in Roman Holiday in season 2. Let's do it again. Let's have some fun. And this one, I know you'll hate. Like, you will not like this movie. So I'm super excited about it. But I just feel like we need a black and white movie. And that's what we're going to do. And that's what we're going to have.
I guess I can't really say I'm looking forward to it because you have strongly come out in the opinion that I will hate it. So, you know, but what else is new? I guess we'll find out just how much I hate this movie next time. Thanks again to Luke for coming on and chatting about this with us. If you'd like to find us and tell us your thoughts, you can do that on Instagram at @loveatfirstscreening. Or if you're old school, but not that old school, more like old school 1990s, you know, you can send us an email at loveatfirstscreening@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you would like us to watch. We've watched this one, which was highly requested. So tell us what we need to be watching next. But yeah, once again, we're Love at First Screening. We're here every Wednesday talking about all of the rom-coms you love, love to hate, and everything in between. So until next time.
Should we start giving men microphones?
No.
They already bought them to start their own podcast, so you don't need to give them them. Just don't give them the opportunity to use it.
Wise. Very, very wise.